Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast of the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. I'm David Bowes, your host. Today we're going to talk about the six-year anniversary of the Kitzmiller versus Dover case. Why is it celebrated by neo-Darwinists? What is its true significance? What has been the impact of the Dover case on the movement as a whole? And in light of the case, how is the future of the ID movement looking? Here to talk about it with me is Casey Aluskin of the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. Why don't we start by going over the Kitzmiller versus Dover case? What happened and what was the judgment?
Well, the Kitzmiller versus Dover case was the first lawsuit to assess the constitutionality of teaching intelligent design in public schools. Contrary to popular belief, intelligent design has not been tried before the U.S. Supreme Court. There's actually only been one court case, and that's at the lowest level of the federal courts. Which tried whether intelligent design is legal to teach in public schools. And that was the Kitzmiller versus Dover case. It happened in 2005. And unfortunately, the judge in that case did rule that intelligent design is unconstitutional. But from our perspective, that ruling was very deeply flawed. There were a number of problems with the ruling. We can get into those if you want. But for one, the judge basically completely misrepresented the very nature and definition of intelligent design.
Before we get into the flaws of the ruling, real quickly, the Discovery Institute, while people celebrate this, neo-Darwinists celebrate this as a victory over the Discovery Institute, I think we should also point out that the Discovery Institute was not in favor of this particular teaching in the school anyway, right?
That's exactly right. A lot of folks blame us for the Dover case, when in fact, Discovery Institute has long opposed attempts to push intelligent design into public education. This was our policy for years before the Dover case, and it's been our policy since the Dover case. So prior to the Dover case, we actually did have some contact with the Dover School Board. This was before I joined Discovery Institute, but other people did have contact with Dover, and they adamantly pressed Dover to not adopt a policy that was going to push ID into their classrooms. The reason why we don't want intelligent design to be pushed into public schools is because we want the debate over intelligent design to be scientific and not political. And when you push the debate into the public school classroom, it takes the debate out of the scientific realm, forces it into the political realm, and ends up really politicizing the debate, which in the end results in increased politicization and intolerance towards ID proponents in the academy. So, yeah, we opposed Dover's policy. We did not support them going to trial. We thought they should have just dropped their policy, and we thought that it was a very deeply flawed case.
So Judge Jones is ruling on this case. You mentioned that it was flawed for a couple of reasons. What are some?
Well, as we mentioned, the main flaw was that Judge Jones misrepresented the definition of intelligent design. He said that ID is a strictly negative argument against evolution that appeals to the supernatural. And of course, both of those claims are not true. Intelligent design is based upon a positive argument where we're trying to find in nature the type of information which in our experience comes from intelligence. Judge Jones says that ID is simply an argument against evolution, that we prove ID by simply negating Darwinian theory. And that is not at all how we argue for intelligent design. And also, he said that ID explicitly refers to God and the supernatural. And that's not correct. ID simply refers to an intelligent cause. And all of the ID proponents who testified as expert witnesses in the courtroom told Judge Jones that ID uses a positive case and that it does not refer to the supernatural. You can believe in the supernatural and believe in God and be an ID proponent, but ID as a scientific theory does not specifically state that. Judge Jones basically just ignored the testimony of those pro-ID expert witnesses and instead went with the critic's version and the critic's definition of intelligent design. And it was really unfortunate because I think what was struck down in the Dover case was not the true theory of intelligent design. Another major issue that Judge Jones got wrong was he claimed that ID does not do research and has no peer-reviewed articles. And these are black and white claims, which we can debate certain things about ID, but these are black and white claims. Either they're true or they're not. And in these cases, Judge Jones simply just got it wrong, and he ignored the peer-reviewed publications that were literally brought to him in briefs and in courtroom testimony. He just ignored them and pretended that they didn't exist.
So on a yearly basis, the neo-Darwinists have been celebrating this Dover Day. Why? What is the significance that they see in it?
Well, for them, it's the day that they think they finally did away with the pesky past of intelligent design. Intelligent design died on December 20th, 2005, the day that Judge Jones issued his ruling, in their view. So they're really celebrating the death of intelligent design. At least they think it's the death of intelligent design.
Because they're able to say, oh, look, the court ruled that this isn't a scientific theory. It's all religion. Now it'll wither on the vine and go away.
Sure. And of course, these are the same people who would say, well, you know, we can't have federal judges defining science or telling us scientists what to think. But when it comes to intelligent design, they're more than happy to take a federal judge ruling that ID is religion and let that be the supposed final say in this debate.
So what do you see as the true significance of the Dover case from the perspective of an intelligent design proponent, if anything?
Yeah, the significance of the Dover case is that, again, our policies that you should not be pushing ID into public schools were vindicated. However, there's been a more, I think, personal cost as a result of Dover. We have seen in the wake of the Dover lawsuit an intense spike in the amount of persecution of pro-ID scientists and faculty as a direct result of the fallout from the Dover case. So we in the ID movement have seen, I would call it more of a personal cost, in that some of our own members have been denied tenure. They've had their free speech rights denied. They've lost their jobs as a direct result from the fallout from the Dover case. So there has been a cause, there has been a real palpable fallout from the Dover case, but it's not been what the Darwin lobby thinks it has been. ID has not died. It's just had to face a lot more persecution than it did prior to Dover.
So in the 6 years since the Dover case, more and more people are struggling to be able to freely express their view that yes, we see an intelligent presence and intelligent design or evidence of that in certain aspects of science.
That's absolutely right. And some of the cases that we've talked about here on ID of the Future, this in the year 2011, went over this. I mean, in the AFA versus California Science Center, a group cannot even rent out a facility at a publicly operated museum for a private event to show a pro-intelligent design film. And guess what? The California Science Center persecutors in that case cited Judge Jones' ruling to justify why they should not allow the ID view to be shown in their facility. So we see people continue to this very day to cite the Dover ruling to justify their intolerance.
So this lower court ruling is being waved about as a precedent. What about in the court of public opinion? What about the way the media has been treating the intelligent design movement? How has that changed over the course of the last 6 years since the Dover decision?
Well, I think those are two different questions, actually. I think in the court of public opinion, ID is doing very well. There was a survey that came out in the 200th anniversary of Darwin's birth in 2009, which showed that over 50% of the public prefers an ID-based view. And if you factor in folks who would take more of a creationist-based view, and you figure that, okay, creationists agree that life was designed, it's far more than 50% of the public. So in the court of public opinion, ID is doing, I think, just as well as it ever has. However, that's not despite the fact that the media is trying its darndest to prevent the public from getting accurate information on ID. One of the interesting things that happened around the time of the Dover case, this was actually the very month that the Dover case started in September of 2005, one of the flagship media insiders journals, it's called Columbia Journalism Review. It's one of those journals that's read by all the bigwigs in the media. They published a cover story on how to deal with intelligent design. And they literally said in this article, I mean, you don't often catch them red-handed like this, where they're actually saying, be biased, don't be fair to a viewpoint. This article literally said, do not treat intelligent design fairly. Do not give the priority viewpoint an equal amount of time in your stories. You should predominate with the evolutionary viewpoint and really don't let ID have a fair say when you cover stories about this in the media. And the media, of course, has very dutifully followed the prescriptions of this story. And we have seen, it's been very tough to get the pro-ID message out in the mainstream media. So we've had to find other ways to get the message out.
It's interesting that it seems to me often, as in the Dover case itself, that the critics of ID get to define ID. So even though ID proponents are saying, no, this is what we believe and this is what we're trying to prove, or this is what we're seeking to prove, it's the critics who get to say, no, don't listen to any of that. Here's what it is, whether it's media or the courts.
That's exactly right. You know, I was always taught that good scholarship allows a person to define their own position. And then you go ahead and you critique their position as they have defined it. apparently the Darwin lobby does not feel confident that they can adequately rebut our position as we have defined it. So they constantly have to misrepresent it as a purely negative critique of evolution that appeals to God and the supernatural and goes beyond the realm of science. And I think it's very revealing that they consistently have to misrepresent our position in order to talk about this subject.
The Dover decision was supposed to be the final nail in the coffin of the ID movement. What kinds of victories has the ID movement seen since the Dover decision?
Well, I think we've seen exactly the kinds of victories which Judge Jones said didn't exist. It was actually late 2011 that the ID movement published, by our count, its 50th peer-reviewed scientific paper. This is very significant. This shows that ID proponents are doing research. They're doing research that's being recognized by mainstream scientific journals, and it's getting published. And that's a recognition that ID proponents have something meritorious, something worthwhile to say scientifically, which is, of course, exactly what the Darwin lobby is telling us isn't true and that we should just ignore this. There's nothing to see here. So the fact that ID proponents are publishing these peer-reviewed papers shows that ID does have a vibrant scientific research program and that it is growing and that it is producing scientific papers. So I think that, you know, really when the Darwin lobby thought that they had killed ID, what actually happened is we went back and we continued to do research and continued to publish papers. And now, you know, really the Darwin lobby's worst nightmare is coming true because the fundamentals of ID are very sound and that we're basing our arguments upon peer-reviewed scientific papers. And that is what the Darwin lobby, you know, knows that they cannot deny and they cannot overturn that.
Aside from additional peer-reviewed papers, are there other areas, not just in terms of more research on intelligent design, but also more evidence coming out undermining neo-Darwinism?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we've seen a lot of books and papers published in the last 3 or 4 years since the Dover trial, which have been highly critical of natural selection as the driving force of evolution, been highly critical of the notion of the tree of life as this idea that all living organisms can be shown how they're related through common ancestry. Basically, the core fundamental tenets of neo-Darwinian theory have totally come under attack in the last 4 or 5 years. And, you know, this is right after, you know, they declared this Pyrrhic Waterloo type victory with Dover in 2005. And meanwhile, scientifically, the story is completely different.
Now, the opponents of intelligent design, the neo-Darwinists, say that the Dover decision is an obsession of the Discovery Institute and an obsession of proponents of intelligent design. How did the Discovery Institute mark the anniversary of the Dover decision this year?
That's a really funny question, David. I mean, we actually totally forgot about the Dover ruling, that it was the anniversary. I think we came into the office the day after on the 21st, and somebody sent an email out saying, you know what, I think yesterday was December 20th. And we all kind of chuckled, huh, that's right. Okay, well, I guess maybe we should write something. So I actually dug up something that I'd written a long time ago that had never been published, sent it off to David Klinghoffer, the editor of Evolution News, and said, hey, let's translate this into a couple articles to post on Evolution News. And that's what we did. So, you know, but the reality is that Dover was an afterthought. Dover is not relevant. It's not something that guides our thinking. It really has no impact on where this debate is going in 2011.
I especially like your reference to Maxwell Smart. You know, missed it by that much. Brought me back to my kidhood. What about the future of the ID movement? How does the future of the ID movement look now? And where are some of the brighter points?
Well, as I said earlier, the fundamentals of the ID movement are sound. And the fundamentals being scientific research and basing ID upon a scientific research program. There are multiple hubs of research groups that are doing ID-related research. There's Biologic Institute here in Seattle. There's the Evolutionary Informatics Lab that William Dembski and Robert Marks have going in Waco, Texas. There's other folks around the country, individual ID researchers that are churning out papers, as well as some folks internationally, such as Wolf Eckert-Loenig, who's published a number of peer-reviewed pro-intelligent design papers in mainstream journals over the last few years. So, yeah, the fundamentals of ID are definitely sound. And what this is allowing us to do is to explore new areas. And we're writing books which are based upon this research, being able to get this message out to the public. You know, there may be sort of a post-Dover media blackout, but we're able to get our message out through things like the ID of the Future podcast, which has over 500,000 downloads a year. Evolution News and Uncommon Dissent are two of the most prominent pro-ID blogs, which have combined well over 1 million hits a year. You've got very high quality Parody videos coming out through Illustra Media, like Metamorphosis, which just came out in 2011, or Darwin's Dilemma, that came out a couple years ago, as well as other great ID videos, Privileged Planet, Unlocking the Mystery of Life. So really, we're finding other ways to get our message out, and we're reaching literally millions of people through these efforts. So, you know, the media can try to censor intelligent design. The Darwin lobby can try to prevent us from being able to have equal access to express our views and the scientific community. But that's not stopping us from doing research. It's not stopping us from publishing our research. And it's not stopping people from hearing the truth about ID.
I've noticed that in Britain, there's a new intelligent design group that is formed to try and give scientists and philosophers and mathematicians and others involved in the movement a bit of camaraderie to be able to talk about these things in a safe environment. What about, we've mentioned before that other people are hesitant to associate themselves with intelligent design. There's a fear, hey, what's going to happen to my job? Do you sense that there's starting to be a greater amount of courage out there among scientists to be willing to say, well, hey, wait a second, they're bringing up some valid points?
Yeah, I mean, my position at Discovery Institute is research coordinator. So I know of a lot of the behind-the-scenes things that are going on. Folks who are coming out of the woodwork, people who are defecting from the other side to our side. And I can say, beyond a shadow of a doubt, this is happening, and may not always hear about it every day, because some of these folks still have careers in the scientific community. They have a lot to lose. They aren't going to come out of the closet, but heads are changing. Minds are changing. Heads are being turned by intelligent design. You mentioned the Center for Intelligent Design in the UK. The ID movement is growing internationally. It's not this peculiar, you know, religiously fundamentalist American phenomenon like the Darwin lobby has called it in the past. It is growing in Europe quite a bit. We've seen a number of scientists banding together to form these ID groups and get the message out about ID, not just in the UK, but also on the continent as well. So ID is growing. The ID movement is growing in Europe, and it's becoming more and more an international phenomenon. Another exciting development is Discovery Institute summer seminars on intelligent design.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. I think that is exciting.
Yeah, every year we have between 30 and 40 students from all different fields in the sciences and the humanities come to Seattle, and they're both undergraduates and graduate students, and they learn about ID from the top names and voices and scholars and scientists in the ID movement, and they're here for about 8 days, and these folks go home with their minds absolutely blown away. A lot of them, you know, they knew a little bit about ID, but mostly what they might have known coming in was the standard, you know, myths about ID that they heard from their professors. Oh, ID is just religion. Dover killed off intelligent design. And they leave realizing that there's all this research that is coming out backing the claims of ID, that a lot of the supposed proofs of evolution which they were taught were flawed, that a lot of the myths about ID that they were told are completely false. And so what we're really seeing is every year, I mean, literally every student that comes into this program leaves having their minds totally changed or just completely being convinced that ID was not the dead thing that they thought it was when they came in. So this is producing year after year. You know, you do this, you're producing hundreds, literally, of students who are going to go on. Many of them are going to go and get graduate degrees, become scientists. They're going to go get positions in institutions. And we're not going to tell over the air, you know, who these people are. We're not going to let Barbara Forrest, you know, put them on her blacklist. But these students are going to go off and get PhDs, and they're going to be credible scientists, and they're going to be more pro-ID voices in the scientific community, having earned that right by doing the research and getting the training. And they are convinced that ID is the best way to go in the future. So this is a very exciting development.
It's probably the first time they've been exposed to the idea of ID when it hasn't been defined by the critics and is instead defined by the scientists and philosophers and others who are actually advocating intelligent design.
Yeah, these summer seminars really show that when you're able to communicate intelligent design in an uncensored, accurate, objective manner, students really come away, hands down, seeing that ID holds merit. And it's not that we're not saying there's no debate. We're not saying that the Darwinian theory has nothing to offer. But when you can communicate ID in a pure, unadulterated, uncensored form, which doesn't happen a lot in academia, it's often the message is totally skewed. You don't get the true, actual version of ID that's been promoted by ID proponents. Students respond to that, and they respond very positively.
Somehow, I don't think this is the first time that a court or some kind of elite group has tried to squash people seeking the truth, only to find out that they were unable to be successful. Casey Luskin, thanks so much for making the time.
Thanks. You know, I'm reminded of Princess Leia's line to Governor Tarkin before he blew up the planet Alderaan. She said, "The more you tighten your grip, the more star systems will slip through your fingertips." And that's exactly what we see happening in the ID debate.
You can't ask for a better close than that. We hope you've enjoyed this podcast of the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. If you'd like to support the Center for Science and Culture, please go to idthefuture.com and click the yellow donate button. This podcast is copyright 2011, the Discovery Institute, all rights reserved.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.